May it please the Court. Your Honors, I think it might be helpful for me to give you just a little bit more background about IndyCar racing at the time that these contracts arose, because I think it's relevant to how this problem developed in the first place. In the 1990s, the IndyCar was dominated by two car manufacturers.
Why is that related to anything? I don't understand.
It's related, Your Honor.
You sued the wrong person and can get relief from it, right?
Correct.
Is that the issue?
That is the issue, Your Honor.
So I would actually appreciate it. Maybe if you have time at the end, you can do this. But I'd like to hear your thinking about what the Supreme Court's decision in Krupski against Costa Crozier does for your case.
Well, Your Honor, initially it wouldn't have done anything for the case because this is an issue of state law, not federal law.
Well, but the federal, you know, you're familiar with Hanna against Plummer. There's a federal rule of civil procedure about amending complaints, and the federal rules are presumptively valid when they govern an area that's arguably procedural, and Rule 15 addresses when something relates back and when it doesn't. Are you arguing that that's unconstitutional?
No, I'm not. My argument is this is a diversity case in which
you don't think the rule federal rules of procedure civil procedure apply in diversity cases?
Oh, I think the federal rules apply, but for the issue of relation back and statute of limitations, it's state law, not federal.
I don't understand this.
I don't either, because actually there are two points of view one might take about the operation of Rule 15. One of them, which is reflected perhaps in our old decision in Hall, is, you know, has the plaintiff been diligent? Has it happened quickly? And the other is prejudice to the defendant. Did the defendant really realize that the proper end of, you know, in other words, here, say, did EMT Inc. realize all along that they were the ones that plaintiff was trying to sue? And Krupski opts for the second perspective, does it not?
Yes, Krupski focuses upon the knowledge and the conduct of the defendant rather than the knowledge of the plaintiff.
So focusing on the knowledge and conduct of the defendant, is it your position that these various entities, in a sense, I'll just say, knew all along that it was Hall Inc. That was being sued, not all of these, EMT Inc., not all these other entities, EMT Racing, EMT Racing IRL, et cetera, et cetera.
Certainly, and they knew for two reasons. They knew because the complaint itself identified the entity being sued as also known as G-Force and described.
And that's unique to EMT Inc.? EMT Racing was never known as G-Force?
That is correct.
Okay. I have a trivial question. I should have looked this up, but how big is Brazelton, Georgia?
Suburb of Atlanta. By itself, I think it's tiny, but I can't tell you what.
So if there's one address in Brazelton, Georgia, used by all of these people,
yes,
then perhaps are you saying that that's another reason to infer that EMT Inc. knew that it was the intended defendant all along?
Certainly. That EMT Inc. Is not a separate entity in our view. These are all the same entities. This is all part of Don Panis's racing organization. As I started off historically, I was trying to get to explaining that historically this all started when Don Panis bought G-Force, which is a UK company, and he was trying to organize it in the United States. And in doing so, there were a bunch of false starts. Entities were created and then abandoned for the purpose of running G-Force. Until an entity could be designated to run G-Force, they simply ran it with multiple personnel from multiple companies. We would have old G-Force UK personnel in England who would have communications with Mr. Wardrip. Then the next day, we'd have a Fountainhead Holding Company individual taking a different role. In fact, no EMT Inc. employees, as far as we're aware, ever had anything to do with G-Force other than being designated after the fact as the entity that Mr. Panis would say owned and ran this company. Essentially, they were running an unincorporated entity where G-Force or EMT Racing, as they also called it, were run by a variety of different individuals working out of different as employees of different entities, but they all operated out of the same location, and they commingled these responsibilities.
But doesn't Mr. Wardrop's contract actually identify a corporate entity, the written one?
It does identify a corporate entity, but it also indicates that that wasn't the corporate entity that was going to ultimately be running things. If you recall, one of the elements of the written document he signed was that he was to be given an ownership interest that could not yet be determined, and the reason that ownership interest couldn't be determined is that he was told they had not yet decided what the corporate structure was going to be for this entity in the United States. In addition,
he really signed a contract with pig and a poke, it sounds like.
Well, when the contract was agreed upon originally, that wasn't the case. When the original contract, G-Force UK was the entity that made G-Force, and G-Force LLC was the American subsidiary that was the marketing agency. That's where the original contract was made, because Mr. Panos had already begun the process of buying those entities.
Back when it was an oral contract?
That's right. Yeah. And Mr. Panos had called the CEO of G-Force LLC, the marketing entity, and Mr. Wardrop to Brazelton, and had at that point engaged a contract with Mr. Wardrop to sell G-Force cars. And it was clear at that point that he didn't know what this corporate structure was going to be of this entity. And what followed made that clear. He created, for example, a G-Force Georgia corporation that then never did any business. He created EMT Racing, which was a name that then appears on invoices for G-Force, but actually worked only with Trans Am cars. I'm told, I'm not sure it's true, I've been told that perhaps EMT Inc. has now been dissolved and yet a new G-Force entity or new EMT entity.
Isn't it fair to say that Krupski really overrules Hall?
I believe it does.
And as a result of that, isn't it necessarily follow that the district court's ruling, at least as to whether to tentatively allow the amendment, was mistaken?
I believe so, Your Honor. Yes.
And let me ask you one thing. Wouldn't it be more appropriate to determine the relation back issue after the amendment is allowed, so that the party that's supposedly the real party can come in and say, well, we didn't know, it wasn't our mistake, or something along those lines? I mean, didn't the district judge here sort of determine the relation back, kind of jump the gun?
If Hall were good law, he probably didn't, because he followed Hall. But under Krupke, yes, I think you're correct, that under Krupke he should have made that a two-part analysis and should have allowed the amendment and then looked at the relation back issue. Although it is proper to decide that I'm not going to permit an amendment because it would be futile, because it wouldn't relate back. So I could see why he would look at those two things together, or might look at those two things together. But I think the relation back in this case isn't a very difficult step to make, because the person who was served was the person who had created these entities. I mean, Mr. Mastandrea was the CFO of the holding company. He was an incorporator of EMT Racing. He was an officer of virtually all of the EMT entities. He was the individual.
He wore a lot of hats, you're saying.
That's right. And he was the individual who was a primary contract with Mr. Wardrop in the administration of his contract. So this is a person who clearly knows, in fact, maybe the only one, who knows which entity Mr. Panos is actually using to sell G-Force. That was something that would be difficult for anyone outside of the entity to know. But certainly Mr. Mastandrea wasn't confused into believing that an entity which sells Trans Am parts was really known as G-Force and was the entity that Mr. Wardrop was dealing with.
How long has this suit been going on?
Way too long, Your Honor. This lawsuit was filed at the end of 2003, I believe.
2003, I thought. When was the bankruptcy filed?
Recently, but I don't have a date.
This suit predates the bankruptcy.
Yes, far predates the bankruptcy, yes.
And, Let me ask your opponent something.
Is that it?
Yeah, basically it is. Judge Adelman, I think the case is resolved by Krupski.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Fisher. Mr. Brodnick?
May it please the Court, Your Honor. My client is Alon Racing Corporation. That is the entity that was served with process, and that is the entity that is before the court and was before the district court.
Have you been prejudiced by the delay in identifying the real defendant?
I would argue, Your Honor, that Alon Technologies, Inc. certainly would have been prejudiced by this delay.
What is the prejudice now?
But the prejudice would be that they would now be entering a case 7 years after it was filed.
What is the prejudice? Be concrete.
Several instances, Your Honor. First, an entirely new party is coming into the case. That would be Alon Technologies.
Be concrete, would you please? I don't care if a thousand new parties are entering the case. You tell me what is the harm if the real defendant now has to defend this case. What is the harm as a result of it's not having been identified earlier?
Well, I would argue, Your Honor, that over the course of 7 years, memories have faded, documents no longer
memories?
Exist.
What documents?
Well, the primary
documents haven't faded.
The primary.
So what's the
pick the primary
out the
harm,
worst the worst harm that you're.
Well, the primary harm, Your Honor, is that they have now asserted an entirely different contract for a basis of liability. They no longer assert that an employment agreement was entered into with Alon Racing Corp. or even Alon Technologies,
well,
that's
Inc. That's still the parties' names. And if it's since it's there's a written contract, I mean, certainly if this were only oral events, maybe your memories fade argument would have some traction. But people, contracts can be read. I mean, we're still speaking the same language now that we did back in 2000.
But the amendment, Your Honor, what they seek to have amended and the new complaint they seek to have before the district court is that a contract was entered into between Mr. Wardrip and G-Force LLC, a Colorado limited liability corporation.
Again, there's this giant family of companies. Here's the question that I wanted to ask you. EMT Racing Corporation is your client.
Yes, Your Honor.
You were initially named in Mr. Wardrip's 2003 complaint. You then defended, as far as I can tell, this suit for over 6 years without a peep of, why are you suing us? We're a stranger to this contract. We don't have any gripe with Mr. Wardrip. It's a little strange that something would go on that long because litigation isn't that much fun. And most people, if they've got an obvious way out, would take it.
Well, Your Honor, the allegations of the complaint were that the employment agreement was entered into with Alon Racing Corporation.
But look, you're saying it's just plainly obvious as soon as you look at the written contract that EMT Racing Corporation never had anything to do with Mr. Wardrip. You worked with a completely different kind of racing car. It's just the wrong party. And so I just find it very curious that with an obvious motion to make, we have no relationship with you, dismiss this claim for failure to state a claim. You go on for 6 years defending the case.
Your Honor, Alon Racing Corp. did identify its parent corporation as Alon Motorsports Technologies, Inc.
You're
in
not
its
answering
corporate disclosure.
Your question.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe I am, with all due respect.
No, you're not.
Let me suggest perhaps not to our satisfaction. So maybe
thank you, Your Honor. I will try to answer the question to your satisfaction. That we certainly did file a motion for summary judgment in 2005. We answered the complaint, which specifically denied that we ever did business as G-Force and that we ever entered into an agreement with Mr. Wardrip. We filed a case management plan that indicated we never employed this gentleman and that we owed him nothing. We filed a summary judgment.
Why don't you just say that it's this other corporation, not us?
Well, Your Honor, I suspect that could have been done, but for whatever reason it was not. I do not want to get into, obviously, attorney-client privilege issues here with regard to communications that we've had with the client, and I can't tell, to be honest with you, I have no idea when a lot of
attorney-client privilege. Don't be ridiculous.
Your Honor, I have no idea when Alon Technologies may have found out about this mistake or this alleged mistake. The bottom line is that Mr. Wardrip alleged repeatedly that he entered into an agreement with Alon Motorsports Racing Corporation.
These are all the same people. I mean, it's all the same address. It's all the same place. It's all the same people. Yes, you know, people do have these proliferations of corporations and LLCs and everything else sometimes, but it seems that to say that you are as distinct as, say, Toyota is from General Motors, it isn't really a very accurate portrayal of what's going on here.
Your Honor, they are clearly related entities in the standpoint that Elan Racing Corp is a subsidiary of Elan Technologies, Inc., no question. But the case law is fairly clear that simply interrelated entities are not the same entity.
The key word being simply. I mean, if there is more evidence that there is, in fact, no meaningful separation, that's a different case.
Well, the and that may be true, Your Honor, but you've got to look at the facts that are in...
Which takes us back to Rule 15C and notice. Why doesn't Krupski just completely destroy at least your temporary victory in this
case? Well, a couple of reasons, Your Honor. First, that the Supreme Court in Krupski made it clear that it was not overruling all of the cases that it had cited in its case because they are fact-specific.
No, but it looks like after Krupski, the only question that's relevant is whether there was a mistake, whether you knew there was a mistake, and whether there was prejudice to you. Now, the district judge didn't make a finding about prejudice.
And Your Honor, he did not, Your Honor, specifically in his order.
There's obviously a mistake, no finding of prejudice. So, kind of the end of it.
Your Honor, I disagree with that. This court can affirm on any ground within the record. And it was certainly argued
That is not accurate. The ground has to have been made in the district court. It has to be raised so that the other side had a chance to deal with it.
Your Honor, and we did raise that in the district court. We argued significantly Rule 15A. We argued undue prejudice. We argued undue delay.
Didn't make any finding.
He did not.
You want us to find that there was... Now, undue delay is out of it. You want us to find that there was prejudice to your client?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't want you to find that there was prejudice to Elan Racing Corp. And Elan Technologies, Inc. is not in front of this court. What we argued to the district court was that there is ample cause under Rule 15A for the district court to deny this amendment. Those reasons are undue delay, they're prejudice.
Arguing that this non-client of yours is prejudiced?
Your Honor, I am not making any arguments on behalf of Elan Technologies, Inc. I made that.
So who's prejudiced then?
Well, I believe Elan... Your Honor, the idea was that I was going to be going to court.
Preposterous. This is a joke.
Your Honor, I respectfully disagree with that. It is not a joke. There is nothing that Elan Racing Corp. or Elan Technologies, Inc. did prior to the running of the statute of limitations in this case that could have misled Mr. Wardrop in any fashion. All of the arguments that he raises were argued significantly down the road.
But the question is what vitality that argument has after Krupski.
Your Honor, Krupski, again, even to the extent it overruled Hall, the argument, the case was made in Krupski that post-complaint filing conduct by the plaintiff can inform the decision as to whether Elan Technologies, Inc. knew or should have known with regard to whether there was a mistake made. On November 23, 2009, Mr. Wardrop...
There was no reason for you to, for your client, I don't even know who your client is anymore, but there's no reason for it to think that he had made a mistake.
Elan Technologies Inc. has never been in front of the district court, and it's not in front of this court now. So I don't know what Elan Technologies Inc.'s thought process
was. You're arguing that they were prejudiced. Right?
I am not arguing that. I am arguing that that is an alternative grounds could uphold that decision.
But it isn't. And I just want to remind you of one critical line from Krupski where the Supreme Court says, Rule 15C1C little 2 asks what the prospective defendant knew or should have known during the Rule 4M period, not what the plaintiff knew or should have known at the time of filing her original complaint. So that's what takes us right into a finding that has never been made by the district court. What did EMT know or should it have known during the 4M period? You are not speaking for them. You're speaking for your client. And I don't know how, in the absence of a finding like that, this court can do anything but follow what the Supreme Court has said and send it back.
Your Honor, I agree. I'm certainly not speaking for Elan Technologies, Inc. And
I understand. I thought you said they were prejudiced.
Your Honor, I'm not. I am saying that prejudice would abound in.
I mean, this is so ludicrous, really. It is so ludicrous for you to be pretending that you're not representing them.
Your Honor, I am not. With all due respect.
In addition, you can't manufacture prejudice. You can't sit back and say this dope has sued the wrong party. We know who they intended to sue, but they made a mistake. We're going to sit. Because after enough years, we'll be able to say, well, hell, we can't defend this case now. It's been 6 years, right? Manufacture prejudice. You could easily, at the very first, have said, you've sued the wrong person. The contract was with X, not with Y. Instead, you said, hope the case will go away, or at least that you will be able to, make a prejudice case if enough years go by.
Your Honor, with all due respect, I disagree with that. We did indicate in the answer we never employed Mr. Wardrop. We indicated that we did not owe Mr. Wardrop any money. We indicated in the answer that we never did business as GeForce LLC.
So you wait for the statute of limitations to run.
Your Honor,
aware of Rule 15, however. So.
Your Honor, the statute of limitations would have expired long before we filed an answer to this complaint. It expired 15 days after the complaint was filed before Elan Technologies Racing Corporation did anything, or before Elan Technologies, Inc., who's not before this court, would have done anything. At that point in time, the statute had expired. So there is nothing Elan Technologies, Inc., or Elan Racing Corp. did that could have prejudiced Mr. Wardrop. The bottom line is the parties, Elan Racing Corp. denied it was a party to this contract. It stated it owed no money to Mr. Wardrop. It did that in its answer. It did that in its case management plan. The parties agreed to a case management plan cutoff of November 1st, 2004. Mr. Wardrop never even took discovery until after that case management plan had expired. Therefore, there's simply nothing that Elan Racing Corp. did that could have prejudiced Mr. Wardrop prior to the statute of limitations expiring. For those reasons, Your Honor, there is undue delay. Mr. Wardrop never made a motion.
That's not a factor that the Supreme Court thought was important in Krupski.
Well, Your Honor, but the Supreme Court was only relying on Rule 15C. And
you think the Supreme Court forgot that Rule 15A is in the picture?
Well, it was not raised by the parties, from what I can tell, in Krupski. And that motion to amend was only made 4 months after the complaint was filed. Rule 15A certainly provides alternative grounds, and not only 15A, but Rule 16.
Krupski says courts are precluded from considering a plaintiff's dilatory conduct in justifying. And of course, in Krupski, the defendants tell them numerous times who the right defendant should have been, and they somehow or another just didn't amend the complaint until later.
Your Honor, the Supreme Court in Krupski made that statement with regard specifically to Rule 15C. It did not make that statement with regard to Rule 15A, and in fact it said that
maybe it did that on purpose. Maybe it figured if the defendant knew all along who the correct defendant would be, that that's where the locus of responsibility lies.
Well, I think we'd be reading far too much into Krupski to make that determination, Your Honor, because I certainly don't see it within the Krupski case. And the Supreme Court did indicate that the district court is still vested with discretion to deny a motion to amend under the Rule 15A standards. And in this case, Your Honor, there were additional allegations made in Mr. Wardrop's complaint. He alleged two contracts, not one, which the district court had already rejected back in 2005, finding that there was only one contract alleged in his complaint. The new complaint alleges two. So he tried to make an end run around the district court's complaint 4 years after the fact. He also alleged quantum meruit, a cause of action that is going to require expert testimony in the case. No one hired an expert in this case because it was always a contract case, not an implied in fact quantum merit claim.
Make all these arguments to the district court.
Your Honor, again, we believe that this may I finish my thought, Your Honor? I see it through the red light. Your Honor, again, we believe that under this court's decisions in Rose Acre and into the Mass Mutual case under the Supreme Court, that this court can affirm on any ground in the record. And Rule 15A is certainly in the record, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Do you have anything further?
Be very brief. Judge Adelman, I think you're quite correct that the way to handle this is a two-step proceeding, that if we go ahead and permit the amendment and then we can argue the issue of relation back, and that would end the dispute about whether EMT Inc. is or isn't before the court at the time. They would be before the court to argue prejudice on their own. The only other thing I'd point out to the court is EMT Racing Corp., the named defendant, was dissolved in 2005. So I'm not sure who's been defending since the entity doesn't exist anymore. Presumably its parent company would be all that's left. Its parent company is EMT Inc. So I question the argument that EMT Inc. hasn't, in fact, always been the defendant in this case. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Fisher and Mr. Brodnick.